It's Radio Free 501c, the podcast of Rogue Tulips Consulting. I'm your host, Cecilia Sopp, and we're so excited to be back for Season 6 and continue bringing you outstanding ideas and thought leaders and different ways of thinking. So don't forget to subscribe because you're not going to want to miss any of it. This week, I welcome first-time guest Mariama Boney. She's the chair of the ASAE Ethics Committee. And in honor of April Fool's Day, we're here to talk about negligent fools and CEO ethics and the importance of nonprofit ethics. Welcome to episode 235. Hey, everybody. It's Monday, April 1st. It's April Fool's Day in most of the world. And we're glad you're here with us, No Foolin'. I'm your host, Cecilia Sepp. I'm the principal and founder of Rogue Tulips Consulting. I'm a CAE and an ACNP. And so glad you're here with me this week because first-time guest Mariama Boney is here to talk about a really important topic. We're talking about negligent fools and CEO ethics within the nonprofit management profession. Mariama is also the chair of the ASA Ethics Committee, so she has a really insightful take on this topic. But before we get into the discussion, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening to our entire global audience, wherever you may be. And thanks again for joining us. Please don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss a thing. But Mariama, I'm so glad you're here. We've had a lot of conversations over the years and so glad to actually have you here as a guest. Would you like to say hello to the audience and tell us a little about yourself?
Yeah. Hi, everyone. It's Mariama and great to be here. Mariama Boney, President and CEO of Achieve More LLC. We focus in on training, coaching, and consulting as it relates to associations in the area of leadership, diversity, equity, inclusion, access, and accessibility, and of course, well-being. So it is an honor and a privilege to be here. I have been an association executive for 25 plus years, worked in higher education, worked in many higher education associations, as well as served as an executive director and ultimately as a member, as a chair, and certainly a volunteer leader across a lot of different spaces and places. And I find myself here with you all today as we are focusing in on ethics and recognizing that I am the current chair of the ASAE Ethics Committee. And it's also, we're just coming out of Ethics Month, right? So we celebrated Ethics Month in March, yet we know that ethics is an everyday issue that we are currently dealing with and really trying to uphold.
And I cannot agree with you more. As you know, we do an ethics course or education program, so I'm with you on that. And I see a lot of things that are now being addressed as if they've never been noticed before. And, you know, frankly, negligent behavior by foolish people in the C-suite has been going on, you know, for decades. I also have been in the profession for many, many years, since 1988 in some capacity. I see people doing unethical things. I see people saying they're not interested in getting the CAE designation because they see too many CAEs being unethical. We've had a couple of really big blowups with huge trade associations like the National Association of Realtors in the ethical area. So what is your reaction to that? You know, this is an interesting topic, kind of provocative, negligent fools and CEO ethics. So it's fools are a good thing to talk about on April 1st. So what are some of the observations you have, Mariama, about this issue? And it's really very crucial, I think, to the future of the existence of our profession.
Oh, absolutely. You know, when we think about ethics, it's so critical to make sure that we are being the change that we want to see, right? And we also know, just heard this wonderful quote again at a leadership conference by a gentleman named John Hope Bryant, that we model the behavior we see. And so he reminded us that we model the behavior we see, which means that as CEOs and those that are in the C-suite, we have to continue to uphold the standards. Certainly, if you're within an association, we want you to be thinking about the ASAE standards as well, and making sure that you are upholding those across your association, and that you are acting fairly, and that you are also integrating diversity, equity, inclusion, and that you are really making sure that you are designing programs, products, and services for your members, your vendors, and your consultants, whatever role you're working with people at, or whatever role you might be serving in, and making sure that, again, you are modeling the behavior that you want others to actually express in your organization, because people model what they see.
That's absolutely correct. I agree with that so much. That's a great quote, by the way. And I also love Mahatma Gandhi's quote that you shared, be the change you want to see in the world.
Absolutely.
It does start at the top. Now, in nonprofit management, we have our own culture in our profession. So how can we, I know we're both, I don't know if we want to have that conversation today, but in our culture, in our profession, what changes could we make to try to influence more ethical decision making and behavior at the C-suite level, not just the CEO, the chief staff executive, but everybody who's in a staff leadership position.
Oh, totally. I mean, well, we know one of the first core ethical standards is to respect and uphold public laws and govern one that govern one's work. So right there, like even when we think about what has happened with the NRA CEO, even when we think about what has happened with the Association of Realtors and others, right? The question is, how are we continuing to respect and uphold public laws? Making sure that we are aligning and doing things legally related to finance, of course.
Of
We know
course.
that that is a huge area where we tend to see leaders, kind of skirt some of those issues, and that is critically important. We also want to make sure that people are being honest in how they're conducting their behavior in their business. And, with that, we really want to ensure that you are telling the truth. We want to be sure that you are also making sure that you set an atmosphere where people can be honest and where people can share what they're feeling. When we think about it, we are seeing this kind of pervasive climate of fear, where if you come forward, then you are also receiving a lot of backlash. You're see receiving elements of discrimination for coming forward. And so we have to get rid of this kind of climate of fear, where the silence ends up being the pervasiveness, because silence does not yield success in this area.
No, it does not. And I agree with you wholeheartedly as a person who frequently speaks up when I have an opinion to share and I see things that could be improved, that could be better. I've seen our own colleagues bullying each other online, which was really just very distressing to me. What I also, and when I see comments in Collaborate, like I see CAEs behaving in unethical manners. I think that is a message that needs to be adjusted as to why we're getting the CAE. I think everybody has their own motivation. Oh, I want to get a raise, I want to get a promotion. But what else the CAE means can improve our ethical mindset and our ethical outlook. And so when we're looking at this, I often think one of the issues with nonprofit management, the C-suite, is people coming into the C-suite who do not understand nonprofit management. They do not understand that it is a profession, it has its own knowledge basis, has its own skill set that you need. And it's not that people can't come in and learn it, but I think too many people come in thinking, oh, I can do this because it's like the Peter principle, you rise to the level of your own incompetence in a lot of ways. So do you think that influences in some ways these financial issues that we have, and sometimes people doing self-dealing at the board level because people don't know how to manage it? There's a lot of examples.
So I think that, we also know another one of the key core standards of conduct that we have throughout ASAE and the core ethical standards is to, make sure that you're fostering an ethical culture throughout your work. And what that means is that you really do have to model and encourage this integration around ethics, which also then stems to the fact that, as you earn the CAE designation, I myself am a CAE as well. And I'm also a certified coach, and I'm also a licensed social worker in two states, right? And so I've got multiple levels of accountability across those different licenses and designations. But I've also served as the CAE facilitator for the CAE kickoff, right, for the last decade. And that has been really important as I've worked with, and as our whole faculty team has worked with thousands of CAEs and prospective CAEs to earn the CAE designation. And one of the things that I always talk about is the fact that, yes, you're earning a designation, but this is about effective practice. Earning the CAE is about effective practice because we want the profession to continue to be better. And part of that training is that we know that we need to make sure that we are not just trying to pass the exam, but that we are actually learning the core principles around ethics. We're learning core principles around association management, and that we are actually really then integrating that into our practice. Somewhere, though, Cecilia, there seems to be a disconnect between once we actually earn the CAE, earn that designation, because there's still standards for the profession, right? Whether you earn the CAE or not. The question is, how are you then really allowing those principles and standards and effective practices that you have learned to really bubble up in your organization? And to what extent then do you speak up and raise questions when you see that things are misaligned? And that element, though, of speaking up and raising questions is a core leadership element that we all have to get comfortable with. And so that's really critical as well. And so it is then very easy for volunteer leaders and board members to go astray or go a different way if the chief executive and those that are in the C-suite, and even those that are perhaps managing committees, are not really aligned in terms of what that ethical culture is that we need and must have within the organization and within the association.
And I think that's an excellent overview of that. I agree wholeheartedly again, because in the work I do with people, I'm always reminding people of that. Just talking with my colleagues, a lot of people don't know the standards of conduct are for everyone, not just CAE. So yes, everyone, they are for everyone. And I make sure in one of the first sessions and study groups or courses that people get a copy of the SA standards of conduct, and we talk about it. And I point out, we're both currently working as consultants. We've also been on staff. We've both been CSEs. That there's also, a version of that standard of conduct specifically for consultants. It's very similar, but it's just put in the context of the kind of work we're doing right now. We could be back on staff next week. You never know. You might get that great offer and say, okay, I'm going to go do that. And I love that. You've talked about something that I think you mentioned it earlier. I think we need to talk about more. And that is the fear factor that is created, not just in organizations where ASA members or other nonprofit organization members work, but within our own profession, there is a fear factor of speaking out, saying things, talking. And when I say to people, why are you afraid to say something? They say, I'm afraid I'm going to get into trouble. And I don't know if you hear people say that, but my response is always, well, what do you mean by trouble? So do you ever hear that from people?
Yeah, I mean, I do hear that. I hear, I'm afraid I'm going to get into trouble. I'm afraid I'm going to be looked at a certain way. I'm afraid I might lose my job, and that job connects to my livelihood and my well-being for my family. And that is where it's absolutely critical to be thinking about these whistleblower policies and making sure that you have one, and making sure that it's clear what those protections are and how we behave as it relates to when we need to raise questions. The other element, too, that is also another core ethical standard within the standards of conduct is taking responsibility for your conduct. which means that we are going to continue to exhibit professional conduct at all levels. And that also, even though, means that we need to follow the established standards, follow these principles, and we have a responsibility in our conduct to raise the questions. We have a responsibility in our conduct to know that there are certain parameters and things that protect us as we're bringing these questions forward. So yeah, I've heard that, and I've been in situations where I have had to raise the questions. I've had board members or volunteers to try to slide things by, and our staff has caught them, and then we end up, having to connect with legal and dealing with the expense of that. So on one hand, it's what is the internal fear that you need to work through to actually get over this barrier of speaking up and raising the questions. And then I often ask, would it be worse though if you didn't say anything and it was discovered and you were held accountable for that? And then also, there's the other element of when we do raise issues and we do need to engage legal, then the expense and the perception and all of the climate changing elements that having to get involved in working with a lawyer to mitigate risk is also very real. And I've been in those situations as well.
And I
So
think
on all of those levels, the question is, which is worse?
speaking up or creating other problems.
Right.
Because that's what happens. And I have found in my life, and I'm sure you've seen it too, not addressing something many times is worse than addressing it, because it is uncomfortable to be that person and saying something, because you're often the only person saying something. But I have found as many times that if I bring something up, all of a sudden, other people will say, "Oh, you know what? I was thinking the same thing."
Yes,
But they were
absolutely.
afraid to say anything because they thought, well, nobody else is thinking this. And I call it having the courage of your convictions. If you feel that this is something that you need to say something about, that it's wrong, not just for you, but for other people, I think it's more important to speak up for other people than yourself, because those people are afraid to speak. And so, helping people find that place where they feel comfortable. And sometimes there's that old saying, some days the bear eats you. And what that means is some days you're going to lose, or you're going to have to not take care of something that you really want to take care of. You might have to let it go until another point in time. Not that you totally let it go, but you do have to let some things go until it's a more appropriate time to bring it up. And you also don't want to like start shouting in the middle of an all member meeting, right? Like, I accuse you of embezzlement. No, you probably want to go to that person and say, hey, what's going on with this money? Because it's not balancing out. You don't want to start screaming out because you don't always know. And so that's why you should ask first. And so kind of helping people feel comfortable asking those questions. Like, that's what I do. Like, I will just go to people and say, hey, what's going on with this? Could you, it looks weird. It looks funky, whatever you want to call it. But sometimes you do people out on their bad behavior.
Well, totally. And that's why we also have in the ethics toolkit, there is a decision matrix that allows you to be able to ask yourself some questions and kind of follow the path, right? Of is it legal? Is it moral? Is it ethical? And what are all of the interactions there? And also, I highly recommend to people as they're working on their leadership to read and integrate Marley Adams' philosophy and the research that she has done on change your questions, change your life. Because the more that we use better critical questioning skills, it allows us to be able to kind of get to the root of things that might be happening. It also gives people the space to be able to be transparent. and to also be able to have some openness as it relates to how processes, policies, procedures are working. And so the more that we can ask those questions and ask those critical questions and get really good as leaders around the questions that we're asking, you'd be surprised how that can also create avenues of transparency and sometimes give other people the permission to ask questions and give other people and create some comfort for other people to frame their own questions. And then, hopefully 2 times 2 equals 4, right? And continues to multiply so that you can actually get to the root of, is this an ethical issue? Is it a moral issue? Is it a legal issue? Is it all of the above? And to what extent we can actually really be looking at some of those standards. Yet, you also have to foster an environment where it's okay to ask a question. It's got to be okay to not know everything, and or it's got to be okay to be in an environment where we're thinking about inclusion of differing viewpoints.
Yes, 100% love it. I think that's great because you do have to be able to ask the questions. And and being able to question helps us break out of the that's the way we've always done it mindset or going along to get along, which is really, it's like that quote about people committing war crimes, I was just following orders. Really, you had no moral compass of your own. So we all have our own moral compass. And if we're feeling uncomfortable about something, we're probably right. And we should explore that by asking different questions and in flipping the question. If you're hitting a roadblock, flip that question and look at it from a different perspective. It's like, writing for your audience. How is my audience going to receive this information? And it's the same thing. You're looking at it from your perspective. Try to flip it and say, well, how would I feel if I were the person suffering the brunt of whatever this action is going to cause? So, and I do know we have to wrap up our episode. This is a great conversation. I know you and I could just like talk about negligent fools and pseudo ethics all afternoon, but we probably got to wrap it up because I know we have scheduling pressures on both of us. So, I want to thank you for joining me. It's been so great having you here on this week's episode. And last week we had Vice Chair Cindy Ziegler of the Ethics Committee come on and give us an update. And you came and gave us like some really juicy, things to think about. So I really appreciate that. I'm always outspoken, so I love having somebody else who's outspoken on the show too. So it's been great. But before we wrap up, Mariama, I always like to ask my guests, what's the one thought you would like people to take away today? And then how can they get in touch with you if they'd like to learn more?
Oh, certainly. So I am out there on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook. You can look me up personally, Mariama Boni, and then also Achieve More LLC. The other element is that I think it's really important that as I opened with, is people model the behavior that they see. And we all want to be sure that we are constantly looking at our own conduct and asking ourselves, is this behavior that we would want our staff, our employees, our volunteer leaders to model? And I think the other element is also, how do we make it okay and safe and create safe spaces for people to have a voice, to ask their questions, and making sure that we are training up for that, because that's really key as well. And just a recent article, also that I want to make sure that people get, and maybe in the notes, the show notes will be able to include this link, is a great article that just came out by members of the Ethics Committee that talks about, the CEO as the Chief Ethics Officer, and making sure that the CEO and the team are really, again, modeling that behavior and integrating that throughout the policies, the processes, and the procedures that ultimately impact the people.
I saw that article. It's good. So if you're an ASAE member, look up that article. Also, if you're an ASAE member, there's a newer Collaborate community called the Ethics Community. And you can go in there and talk about ethical issues or ask questions. There's also a great advice column called Edith Ethics, and you can submit a question, and Edith Ethics will answer your ethics question. So,
And we
well,
do a
thank
lot of
you.
work around intersectional ethics, of course, in terms of ethics as it relates to diversity, equity, inclusion, access, ethics as it relates to well-being, ethics as it relates to leadership. So certainly consider Achieve More LLC as a partner in that, and consider the ethics committee on behalf of ASAE as your partner and ways that you can be thinking about the standards of conduct. We have some amazing sessions that are going to be coming up that are going to be featured at MMC Plus Tech. I'm doing a session there. And we also have two sessions that I'm involved in, and the ethics committee is also, and previous members of the ethics committee are also going to be involved in at ASAE Annual 2024. So look out for those ethics sessions, and there's wonderful content on the ASAE platform. And Cecilia, we also know that you also offer some great sessions. So there's a lot of things out there in terms of the ethics tools and resources, and even things that are coming up.
Great. Well, thank you. Thank you for that. That's a great rundown of everything to look forward to. I'm going to miss MMC because I'll be presenting on ethics at the Georgia Society meeting. So I'm afraid I'm going to miss it, but planning to be at annual and looking forward to attending all of these great sessions that are coming up. So everyone, we have to go rogue for now, but we'll be back April 15th. We're taking April 8th off because we're helping Association Laboratory celebrate their 25th anniversary in business. So we'll be back the 15th with another exciting episode. So again, don't forget to subscribe because you don't want to miss a thing. If you'd like to learn more about Rogue Tulips Consulting and how we can help your organization bloom outside the box, check out our website, roguetulips.com. And we also have our education program, creatively named Rogue Tulips Education. So if you're looking for the CAE ethics course that we offer or interested in our fall study group, check out our website and you get some good information there. There's a link on the Rogue Tulips website to take you to the education program. So thanks again, everyone, for joining us. On behalf of Mariama and myself, we'll see you next time.